High school can really and truly be some of the hardest years of a young person's life. Within those walls, teenagers are trying to find out who they are, who they want to be, and really where they fit into the world around them. Usually, that includes making a tight-knit group of friends, and those people generally become your ride-or-die partners, if not for the rest of your life, at least for those high school years. 2 weeks ago, we took a look at the case of Brianna Jai and the way that a friend and that friend's acquaintance brutally murdered Brianna because of a mixture of sadism and hatred. This week, we're going to look at a case where two friends, seemingly not driven by very much at all, make the decision to murder a very close friend of theirs in cold blood, and they then carried on their lives for a time as though nothing had happened, and they had no idea what had happened to their missing friend. Hello, my name is Lance, and welcome to episode 129 of Gone But Never Forgotten, A Friendship That Ended in Cold Blood, The Death of Skylar Neese. Two weeks ago, I covered the case of Brianna Jai and talked about the fact that her life was taken by two people, a very close friend and one other boy. The murder seemed to be driven by sadism and transphobia and has been recognized as a hate crime. In the time since that episode, I have had a few conversations with listeners and was actually shocked to find that people seem to dispute one of the facts that I led that episode with, the fact that our children are killing one another seemingly more and more than ever before. I had people tell me that that was a hate crime, and I had people tell me that outside of situations like school shootings, which I don't know how we disqualify from the equation to begin with, this kind of thing is not happening in any large numbers. So, this week I've decided to start the episode by disputing that fact, but also by sharing a case that doesn't have any of the hatred behind it that Brianna fell victim to. This week's case starts as a case of three friends who were seemingly very close, but that also ended in a brutal murder and actions of two girls immediately after they committed a murder that I think should make us all sick. Skylar Annette Neese was born on February 10th of 1996 in Morgantown, West Virginia, to her parents Dave and Mary Neese, and she was the only child to the couple. Skylar was a 16-year-old girl who seemed to have the world as her oyster, and she had a future that was incredibly bright. Skylar was in the summer prior to her junior year in high school, having just finished grade 10, and she attended University High School in Morgantown, West Virginia. Skylar is described by those that knew her as a girl with an incredibly bubbly and upbeat attitude towards life, and she was also a girl who was incredibly loyal to her friends. Skylar had a 4.0 grade point average, which is equivalent to a 93 to 95% average, and she also worked at Wendy's, holding down a part-time job there so that she had money to spend. It was said that Skylar had a very active social life. Part of that social life was seemingly two friends of hers that she was mostly inseparable with, Sheila Eddy and Rachel Schoaf. Throughout their sophomore year, the three girls were seemingly inseparable, making posts together on social media and always being together. Skylar and Sheila had the longest-standing friendship of the three girls, having been friends since they were 8 years old, half of their lives. Dave and Mary said that Sheila was like a part of their family, and she had always been there. She would simply walk into the family home without knocking on the door first, and she essentially became a second daughter to the couple and a part of their family. During their freshman year, in September of 2010, Sheila would meet Rachel Schoaf, who transferred to University High School in October, and that is when the three girls all became acquainted together and started their friendship. Many people said that while the three did seem inseparable on social media posts, their friendship was very much akin to, I think, what many of us think of when we think of best friends in high school. Many said that the three had a very toxic relationship at times, and that Skylar seemed to become the odd one out in the three-way friendship sometimes. Sheila and Rachel would oftentimes pick on Skylar and leave her out of activities that they did together. The three, though, did remain close friends even through all of that strife. I think that most of us have had friendships like that in our teenage years, and sometimes even in our adult lives, where we recognize that perhaps the friendship is not everything that we had in the past or everything that we have always wanted, but it is easier to keep the friends that we have than it is to try and change pace and make new friends. The fact that Skylar and Sheila had been friends for so long likely also played a part in that. We will touch more on this later on, but part of the reason why Skylar may have found herself on the outside looking in more often than not, as well, could have been because there was a relationship forming between Sheila and Rachel that went beyond friendship. Other students in school said in hindsight, of course, that they had overheard Sheila and Rachel talking on more than a few occasions about ways to dispose of and hide a body, and they had been overheard a few times as well talking about the fact that they should kill Skylar. We've talked about this many times in the past on this podcast. Things like this are icky. Talking about murder is not something that is normal, and it's not something that people really should take lightly. Sadly, this is another case where there is a small chance that things could have turned out differently if people had reported these types of comments and conversations, but they didn't. People believed that Sheila and Rachel were kidding. In June of 2012, Sheila and Skylar went on a week-long trip, just the two of them, to Myrtle Beach, and it has been since reported that while on that trip, the two were at odds and arguing with each other a lot. It was on the way home from that trip, reportedly, that Sheila told Rachel again that Skylar needed to die. On July 5th of 2012, Skylar came home from her shift at Wendy's to her family's apartment in West Virginia, and she said goodnight and kissed her parents goodnight, seemingly on the way to bed. However, not long after that, surveillance footage outside of the apartment building would later show that Skylar had left through her bedroom window at approximately 12:30 a.m. on July 6th. And she had gotten into a four-door sedan. The following day was when Dave realized that something was wrong. He discovered that Skylar's bedroom door was shut and locked, and when he gained access to the room, he discovered that the window had been left open. Skylar's phone charger was still in the room, and a bench that she used to get in and out of her bedroom had been removed from her closet. The screen from her window was inside of her closet. Dave quickly realized that this was strange. He assumed, of course, that that meant that Skylar had snuck out of her room at night, but he also assumed, based on what he saw, that Skylar intended to also come home. When Dave and Mary received a phone call that Skylar had missed her shift at Wendy's, something that she had never done in the past, they realized that something was very wrong, and it was at that point that they called police and reported Skylar as missing. Police initially viewed the case as that of a runaway, which was further cemented, of course, when the surveillance footage was found. The initial reaction of the police was that they believed that Skylar had escaped to see a boy or attend a party, and that she would likely turn back up rather quickly. I can't be the only person that gets tired of hearing those same old lines and this same old story. It breaks my heart every single time when I read that, and read that that is how the police handled the situation at first. As we all know, time is of the essence when someone disappears. Furthermore, an Amber Alert was also not put out, because at the time there were very significant things that needed to be met for an Amber Alert. At the time, for an Amber Alert to be issued, a child needed to be believed to have been abducted, the child needed to be under the age of 18, the child needed to be believed to be in danger of death or serious injury, and there needed to be sufficient evidence to prove that an Amber Alert would be helpful. In the case of Skylar, seeing as there was evidence that she had left willingly, it was deemed that an Amber Alert would not be useful within this case. It was later deemed that the vehicle that Skylar had gotten into belonged to Sheila, and so she was interviewed. Sheila said that she had indeed been with Rachel, and that the two of them had picked up Skylar, but she said that they had then dropped Skylar off approximately 1 hour later, but they were not caught on camera because Skylar didn't want anyone to see or hear the car pulling up again near her home. So, instead, Sheila said that they had dropped Skylar off down the street from her house. There was, of course, no surveillance footage that showed Skylar returning to her home. Dave and Mary, of course, were beside themselves and feeling as though there was little to no help to be had. Immediately, they knew that this was out of character for Skylar, and so they started to do their own canvassing and started to put up flyers and look around the neighborhood for signs of Skylar. This started in earnest on July 7th of 2012, the day after Skylar had left her family home. Two of the people who had come to help the family immediately were Skylar's close friend, Sheila, and Sheila's mom. Mary even remembers sitting on Skylar's bed with Sheila, and the two of them crying, and wondering where Skylar would have gone and when she would come back. This certainly is about to become incredibly haunting. With no sign of Skylar, the FBI and the West Virginia State Police did join the search way later on September 10th of 2012, and they started to interview people at school and people that knew Skylar and her friends. As a part of the investigation, it was discovered that there were rumors spreading around that Sheila and Rachel had something to do with Skylar's disappearance. There were also rumors, though, that Skylar had gone to a party and overdosed on heroin and she had died. The rumor stated that people at the party had gotten scared when Skylar passed away, and so they took her body and disposed of it. As we all know, people do talk and rumors obviously spread. One investigator, though, from the Star City Police, Jessica Colbank, noticed things when she spoke with and others spoke with Rachel and Sheila. She noticed that both girls quite literally told the exact same story as one another, which isn't something that is normal or usually seen unless a story is rehearsed. Jessica felt like Sheila was not acting the way that a best friend should be acting, and she also felt as though Rachel was scared to death. There was not, though, enough evidence to make any arrests, and so the investigation carried on. Looking at social media really started to show how toxic the relationship between the three girls had been, though, with Skylar tweeting on numerous occasions about the fact that she felt abandoned by Sheila and Rachel. There were many cryptic social media posts from all three girls that, when looked at under the microscope of an investigation, started to open the minds of those looking at the three girls and starting to make many wonder if there was truly more going on between Skylar, Sheila, and Rachel than what met the eye. That is when investigators started to dive a little deeper in on Sheila and Rachel, with one investigator even creating a fake account to follow the girls so that the investigators could get a closer look at the tone and tenor of both. Investigators believed neither girl seemed all that consumed with the fact that their best friend was missing, and some of their posts that they started to see were downright strange. On November 5th of 2012, Sheila had posted to Twitter, now known as X, and said, quote, "No one on this earth can handle me and Rachel. If you think you can, you're wrong," unquote. While being watched, investigators saw that accounts were openly saying that they believed that the two girls were involved in Skylar's disappearance, and that sooner or later the truth would come out. This appeared to give Sheila some anxiety, but much more anxiety seemed to be hitting Rachel. The two girls were brought in repeatedly for interviews in an attempt to turn up the temperature on them both, and over time it seemed that Sheila and Rachel shut out most of the rest of the world and started to solely rely on one another. Investigators still, though, did not have enough evidence to press any charges. And then investigators did finally get their break in the case. On December 28th of 2012, Rachel's mom made a 911 call, and she was incredibly frantic. She was asking for help. She said that she had an issue with her 16-year-old daughter, and she said that her daughter was incredibly out of control. She said that Rachel was hitting herself and her husband, and she said that Rachel was screaming, and she said that Rachel had been running through the neighborhood and saying that she wanted to die. On that 911 call, Rachel can also be heard in the background screaming no and give me the phone to her mom. Ultimately, two officers would attend the home, and after surveying the situation, they strongly suggested to Rachel's mom that they should admit Rachel to a hospital so that she could be evaluated, and that was exactly what they did. It was determined that Rachel had had a nervous breakdown. When Rachel left the hospital and returned home, it would be her mom who would call the family attorney, and a meeting was set up between Rachel, the police, and the attorney. When Rachel arrived, she told her parents to wait outside, and she relayed the entire story. Rachel said that she and Sheila had long planned to kill Skylar. She said that it was something that they had talked about for months. When asked for a reason, all that Rachel said was that she and Sheila didn't want to be friends with Skylar anymore. Rachel said that on the night of the murder, she had taken a shovel from her father's home, and Sheila had taken two knives from her mother's kitchen. They also had packed cleaning supplies and another pair of clothes for each of them so that they could clean up after they killed Skylar. Rachel said that Skylar believed that the three of them were going to drive to Brave, a town just on the other side of the Pennsylvania state line, to get high. the three of them had been to the place that they planned to go in the past. Once they arrived at that place that they planned alongside a forest, Sheila had pretended that she couldn't find her lighter. Skylar got up to go to the car to retrieve her own lighter when Rachel had said, "On three," and after counting to three, the two girls started to stab Skylar. Rachel would say that Skylar had escaped once, but the girls then stabbed her in the knee to prevent her from running anymore. Rachel said that with one of Skylar's dying breaths, she had asked them why. Again, when authorities asked that same question, Rachel said they didn't like Skylar. After they had killed Skylar, Sheila and Rachel attempted to dig a grave, but when they found that the ground was too rocky to permit that, they had dragged Skylar's body towards the forest and buried it underneath brush, sticks, and rocks. Rachel and Sheila had then gone to a nearby creek and cleaned themselves up. The two girls had spent nearly 3 hours at the scene after taking Skylar's life. On January 16th of 2013, over 6 months after Skylar's body was left there, Rachel would lead police to the spot, and Skylar's body was uncovered. Skylar's body by that time was nearly unidentifiable, and it was found in a very shallow grave. The following day, as I mentioned earlier, Sheila had helped to look for Skylar and cried with Skylar's mom over the fact that her friend was missing. And Rachel had left for a 2-week stint at a Catholic summer camp. If that doesn't show you the mindset of these two girls, I really don't know what does. It's very clear that there was very little, if any, remorse from these two young women, and they simply moved on with their lives after dealing with Skylar's friendship once and for all, something that they deemed to be a problem. On March 13th of 2013, U.S. Attorney William J. Ilenfeld issued a press release that stated that a body that was found just over a nearby state line on January 16th, 2013, had been identified as the body of Skylar Neese. Investigators would then match blood samples that were found in Sheila Eddy's trunk to Skylar's DNA, and she would also be subsequently arrested on May 1st of 2013 in the parking lot of a Cracker Barrel restaurant. Also on May 1st of 2013, Rachel Schoaf would plead guilty to second-degree murder as a part of a plea deal for confessing and for her part in implicating Sheila and leading investigators to Skylar's body. Rachel pled guilty to murder in the second degree by unlawfully, feloniously, willfully, maliciously, and intentionally causing the death of Skylar Neese by stabbing her and causing fatal injuries. As a part of that plea deal, the state of West Virginia recommended a sentence of 20 years in prison. On September 4th of 2013, over a year after the murder took place, West Virginia prosecutors would publicly identify Sheila as the second alleged perpetrator, and they then subsequently announced that Sheila would be tried as an adult. On September 6th, Sheila was indicted by a grand jury on one count of kidnapping, one count of first-degree murder, and one count of conspiracy to commit murder. Sheila initially pled not guilty, and the trial was set for January 28th of 2014. Before the trial, though, Sheila would change her plea to guilty to the first-degree murder charge so that other charges would not be brought against her. Ultimately, Rachel Schoaf would be sentenced on February 26th of 2014, and she was sentenced to 30 years in prison with eligibility for parole after 10 years. Sheila Eddy was sentenced as an adult to a life sentence with mercy. Mercy means that she would be eligible for parole after 15 years. Rachel came up for her first chance at parole just last year, and on May 9th of 2023, her bid for parole was denied. David and Mary were both a part of the proceedings and intend to always attend all proceedings. David has said that he was unable to be there for his daughter in her last moments, so he intends to do everything that he can to ensure that her killers do not again see the light of day. At that parole hearing, Rachel finally gave a little bit more of a look into why she and Sheila took Skylar's life. She said that Sheila and herself were in a relationship, and they both felt that if they were exposed, which they believed Skylar might do, they would face dire consequences. She said that after the details of their relationship became known to Skylar, things got violent and hostile between the three, and she said that her teenage mind was unable to handle the conflict, and they just wanted the conflict to come to an end. She did express remorse to Skylar's family and said that she would trade places with Skylar in an instant. David, Skylar's father, presented a prepared statement, which I will read now. Quote, "Ladies and gentlemen of the West Virginia Parole Board, thank you for the opportunity to tell you why I believe this inmate should not be granted parole. Because of that malicious monster, my child never got a limo for her prom. Instead, she got a ride in a coroner's vehicle. Also, there was no sparkling gown for Skylar, just a body bag. She will never have a certificate of graduation, only a death certificate. This narcissistic, first-degree, cold-blooded killer is not sorry for the brutal murder of my only child. It's my belief that she is proud she murdered my daughter in cold blood. The day after she plunged kitchen knives into my child, this devil was seen on a friend's boat, smiling and posing for photographs. The date of July 6, 2012 was chosen for a specific reason, you see. This beast wanted the killing out of the way before she left for church camp. Just another task to mark off of her list, like standing over my child saying, quote, die, bitch, unquote, as my baby girl took her last breath, because the evil butcher didn't want to be her friend. I wasn't there to defend my baby girl from this diabolical killer on July 6th, 2012, but I'm here today to do everything within my power to make sure that she stays behind bars. This inmate had proven that she is both evil and mentally unstable. No one can fix that kind of madness. I believe if she is paroled, she will kill again. Murder is a game to this inmate. Ladies and gentlemen, that is insanity. This person has proved to be a narcissist and is a dangerous person who has no remorse in the least. This inmate has destroyed so many lives when she murdered Skylar. This inmate is just the rat that narked and got a deal. Yes, she showed us where she murdered Skylar, yet she is also the narcissist liar that put my daughter in that place. This monster is a danger to society. If released, no parent can close their eyes at night without fear that their own child could possibly be the next victim. This vicious murderer sits here today asking for a second chance. I ask you, where is Skylar's second chance? Where was her second chance when this monster counted to three and began to slash and stab my only child? I don't want to live in a world without Skylar, but I have to. I want to make sure it's as safe as possible from predators like this one. I ask you to deny parole for this diabolical butcher and allow Skylar's mother and I the knowledge that her killer will not be granted the reality of adulthood that our child was never allowed to experience." Unquote. I think that this is something that gets lost in a lot of true crime stories. Just the absolute emotional hell that family members need to go through in situations like this. Not only did they have to lose their daughter, Dave and Mary also have to live this murder for the rest of their lives. They have to go to parole hearings, they have to be interviewed, they have to face this every single day. And when I read these words from Dave, I wanted to share them because they are so from the heart and they are so raw and they really do show the pain that they are going through at the loss of Skylar. Both Rachel and Sheila are held in the Lakin Correctional Center. Rachel's projected release date is April of 2028. Sheila is eligible for her first parole hearing in May of 2028. I don't even know what else to say about this case. This is another case, much like with Brianna Jai, where Skylar's life was obviously taken way too soon. And the last thing that she saw was two of her best friends stabbing her repeatedly and robbing her of the life that she had ahead of her. We had the life of a bright, bubbly, and intelligent young woman stripped from this world, and in return, two more young women are spending years of their lives in prison. And for what? Because they wanted to end a friendship? Because they were afraid that people would find out that they were dating? Listen, I get it. Being a teenager is hard. You have emotions and you have feelings and you have so many things racing through your mind as you try to find your place in the world. Any of us who survive those years, frankly, are blessed. However, the fact that killing someone, especially a friend or family member, crossed the mind of a young person is haunting, incredibly haunting. Everyone that is listening to this podcast needs to know two things I feel coming out of a case like this. First and foremost, report people who joke about killing someone. I'm sorry, but that is not normal on any level. People who genuinely, openly speak about murder inherently have something wrong with them. Part of the problem in the world around us is that people believe that murder is somehow an answer to a lot of things. Thankfully, most people don't believe that murder is needed to end a friendship, but I digress. People do genuinely believe in today's world that there are justifications for some murders. The second thing we need to realize is that we have a job as adults to help and aid and teach our younger people how to live. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6 says, "Direct your children onto the right path, and when they are older, they will not leave it." Each and every person on this planet needs to do their part with our children to try to teach them the right ways to live. We need to stop teaching our children about hatred, and we need to stop teaching our children to hate differences. We need to teach our children about life and about love and about acceptance. We can't help everyone, but we can darn sure try, can't we? Coming out of this case, there is only one good thing. David and Mary fought long and hard for Skylar's Law. Skylar's Law called for a modification to West Virginia's Amber Alert plan, which was talked about earlier. In April of 2013, Schuyler's Law was signed into law. Schuyler's Law calls for an immediate public announcement when any child is reported missing and in danger, regardless of whether the child is believed to have been kidnapped. This is how I believe it should be everywhere. Our children really and truly are the most important commodity that we have in this world. They are the future, and we need to preserve it. I would much rather spend man hours looking for runaways than have even one more case like this one where a family is told to wait and the end result is the death of their child. We can certainly do better. Thank you to each and every one of you that is listening to this podcast. Please help to spread the word by sharing, commenting, and liking posts on social media. Also, please follow and rate the show wherever you are listening and help us out in any way that you can. One of the best ways that you can help the world around you be even a little bit better is by instilling the right morals and love into the lives of your children and the children around you. Be a good example, be a good role model, and do your part to ensure that the younger generation grows up. We need more good people like Skylar Neese in this world and less children and teens that are being driven by hatred. I will sum it up the way I always do. If you're listening to this podcast, please do your best and do your part and be better. Thank you so much for listening to Gone But Never Forgotten. I'll see you next time.